Welcome to Career Tools. We get questions all the time from members who feel that their career history is, well, less than stellar, and they wonder how to handle it during a job interview. Well, today that's what we're going to talk about. Here we go with How to Answer Questions About Career History, Part 1 of 2. You know, we get questions all the time from folks, and I feel bad for them because they've been beating themselves up about some bad choices or bad circumstances in their life, right? And they think that their performance in their last job was less than stellar, and they know when they go to the interview that they're going to be asked, why did you leave this job? Or what prompted that decision?
Yeah.
And it's painful for them, and it needn't be.
Yeah, I mean, the fear, you know, we've talked about this before. We've alluded to it before when we talk about career transitions and interviewing. The fundamental driver of fear, the sense that that all of us have of, I need to defend my career rather than selling it, right? I mean, if you defend, in fact, I hate to do this to you, dude, but there's a Star Trek episode, one of the new ones, The Next Generation, where there is a really, really smart guy playing this game of very, very complex chess. And everybody thinks that Data, the android smart guy on the show, can beat him. And Data cannot. And this guy's just a genius strategist and so on. Until Data finally discovers the answer is not to try to win, but simply to avoid losing. And he becomes completely defensive. And the guy completely gets frustrated. And Data ends up being able to win.
I missed that episode.
Yeah, sorry.
And folks, Mark likes to play it off like, I'm the geek in this crowd.
Yeah, no, yeah, no, sure.
Not so much.
I'm say that. Right, not so much. Yeah, this is totally a geeked out moment for me. The point, though, is there's a difference between trying to win and trying to avoid losing. And, you know, in the last 20 years, more and more the coalescing of my thought around one of the weaknesses that we all have in interviewing, me too even, right? You're hoping they don't find the weak spots, is defending and thinking about how to defend. And in fact, the fundamental approach ought not to be to defend. It ought to be to sell our positives rather than try to defend our negatives. Look, people go as far as not interviewing because they're so concerned about the question. They're like, well, you know, Mark, I got fired 5 years ago, so I can't leave my company. I'm amazed that they hired me, but I can't leave because, you know, somebody's going to ask, why'd you leave? Why'd you have a 6-month gap? I'm going to have to say something clever. I think they're going to find out, and then nobody's going to ever hire me. And wow, it's just not, it's not true. So
yeah, it's really sad. Well, the good news is that there's a way to answer this question. And that actually, though it is often asked, is much less important to interviewers than you might think.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah. And look, it's simple. The art of answering this question, right? About a career history question. Tell me why you did X or what happened here, where there's a perceived negative, either in your mind or in both your minds, right, is to assign it a proper level of importance. And that goes back to the whole playing defense versus playing offense. And the fact is it happened, and there's no reason to be overly concerned about it. You decide how you're going to answer. Concentrate on the parts of the interview which demonstrate your competence rather than focusing all your time on the defense answer. Because if you defend this, look, if you have a weakness in your background, folks, and you defend that weakness perfectly, and it takes you 5 minutes, you're not going to get hired because it's going to be close enough between you and another candidate. You need those 5 minutes to sell another positive. And you essentially in a 30 or 45 minute interview are losing 10, 15% of your time defending something that you really don't need to defend. Companies will hire you if you've been fired or if you got laid off or if you thought you could take another job, but it didn't work out and you had a 6-month gap in employment. You can do it. Now, look, you might get a minus point, right? But if the rest of the interview is powerful enough, it can add up to so many positives that one minus is not that big a deal. We see this all the time. People call us and say, oh, thank you so much. I got a job. I can't believe it. I had a weakness. No, we didn't do anything. We just told you, focus on your strengths.
Yeah, the problem is folks spend so much time defending the negative, right? Then it's hard to make getting fired a positive. I mean, I guess it could.
No, it's not. Yeah.
Right. So at best, they make it a neutral, right? They make it neutral. And then they spend so much time on that, they have no time left to spend on all the things that could be positive points.
Exactly. And there are two ways to think about time, the time in preparation and the time in the interview, right? So if a guy spends days crafting a clever and therefore wrong, clever answers are wrong with this question, right? A career weakness question. If you spend a bunch of time crafting that answer and worrying about it, you don't spend time prepping for selling your positives. And then you spend 5 to 7 minutes in the interview and in part the cleverness in your answer is what causes it to take longer time. You get two negatives against you. So yeah. Okay. So look, we've got 7 steps we want to walk you through. The first one, number one, and this might not surprise too many of those of you who embrace our approach to direct and candid interviewing. Number one is tell the truth. Okay. Truth is not your enemy in this case, but an answer, quote unquote, hey, Mark, tell me what my answer should be to this. An answer is your enemy. The truth is not, but the answer that you spin is. Number two, you've got to decide on exactly what that truth is. And we don't mean making something up, but you decide on what it is. And then you practice. This is where people stumble. They don't practice and they're afraid that they're going to sound canned. And believe me, folks, you won't sound canned. Number three, above all, folks, you got to be honest, right? And that honesty is a little ray of hope for the recruiter. It's so refreshing. It's so rarely done that it's worth it. Number four, it's got to be short. You've got to be brief so that you don't create a 5-minute discussion. And there can't be any blame about it. People like to blame, oh, it wasn't my fault or whatever. None of that. Number five, you've got to deliver it very matter-of-factly. It can't be defensive. It can't be long-winded. You've just got to say it as if it happened. Number six, you've got to add in some follow-up information. You've got to take the answer to the next step, which leads the recruiter away from this little dark spot. And then number seven, you got to stop worrying about it. That worry, you know, I've said it before, I'm sure on air, worry is like a rocking chair. It gives you something to do, but it doesn't get you anywhere.
Good. So let's talk about the first point, tell the truth, because so often you read advice out there on the web and God knows who's dreaming this stuff up. But this whole idea that you got to come up with some slick answer that evades the truth, that solution is prevalent and it's wrong.
Yeah. In fact, this is another story moment. There's a great movie starring Harrison Ford and I'm blanking on it. It's one of the Tom Clancy movies. I think it's Clear and Present Danger where he goes to South America. And in it, the U.S. president, and Harrison Ford ends up being in the White House. And the U.S. president has a bit of a PR difficulty because one of his close friends was apparently involved with the drug cartel that is the enemy in this case. And he's killed on a boat and there's a bunch of money found on his boat. And it's pretty clearly that he's now dirty in some fashion. And they're discussing how to contain it. In the White House, and of course, Harrison Ford's character is a little overwhelmed that he's in the White House. It is overwhelming to be in the White House. And people are saying, well, we could say this or we could say that. And you could tell they're all spin masters. They're all clever. They're all being, you know, they're all being too smart by half. And Harrison Ford says, you know, I disagree. And everybody stops and says, what? Right? Because diplomats don't say, I disagree, right? Everybody stops and says, well, what do you mean? He says, well, look, it's already happened. I mean, people know that he was your friend, right? And they're like, yeah. So look, admit it, but don't give him anywhere to go. If they ask you if he's your friend, say, yeah, he was a close friend. And then when they say, well, he was a close friend, say, yeah, he was a lifelong friend. He was one of my dear friends, right? You're essentially, what reporters, what people look for, what recruiters looking for is defensiveness to indicate there's a problem. So then they can go into full on searchlight mode and dig to it. Break down your defenses and win that moment. But if you use some verbal judo and you just say, no, yeah, absolutely. You know, yeah, I was fired. Oh no, he was my friend. He was a close friend. He was a lifelong friend. He was my dearest friend. Right. And the recruiter just sits there shaking his head going, are you kidding me? Are you admitting to this? Well, what happens is now they've asked 3 or 4 questions and they're shaking their head and they don't know what to do. And you're not being accused of being defensive. Right. And this is where I think, we've already alluded to it, right? The difference between a truth and an answer is the difference between confidence and defensiveness in an interview. This is where everybody goes wrong on this question. It's a fundamental choice you make early on in your prep. When I have an interviewing, a career weakness, you know, look, if you're wondering, can you be successful? Hopefully some of you listening say, you know, part of the reason I listen is Mark and Mike have had successful careers. Well, in Mark's case, Mark's been fired, right? Walk in one day and get fired. And as I've joked before, how do you start a consulting firm? Well, get fired in your previous job and don't want to move, right? So this is where everybody goes wrong. They think that the answer is to be defensive rather than to be confident. And we get this question a lot, and everybody wants to know how to hide things cleverly. In fact, people have listened to us talk and say, you guys are masters at putting things together. Put this together for me. Well, what is the answer to this situation? I'm like, how could I know that? The answer is the situation. You just tell them what happened, right? And people want to know how to avoid admitting their weakness. Folks, the recruiter knows you have a weakness. The recruiter has a weakness, okay? CEOs have weaknesses. You don't have to avoid admitting your weakness. The strength, the smart role, the smart play, the strong play, the confident play is to admit it and to say, no, he was my good friend. No, he was my close friend. No, he's my dear friend, right? And everybody wants to be a master communicator. And really, and this was a phrase, this is a phrase that comes from Wendy, to answer without answering, right? That's what they want. They want an answer that's clever. Well, recruiters aren't that smart and they're not that dumb. And people want to deflect the conversation. They want to redirect the interviewer with the right words.
Yeah. And you're just sticking your finger in the recruiter's eye, because if there's one thing the recruiter wants is an answer to their question, right? I mean, it's the one thing they want.
Yeah. And they're probably pretty good at getting answers to the questions they want answers to, right? You'd think that maybe they would do that a lot. And believe me, Wendy and I have talked about this. I mean, in fact, this is Wendy's cast. She says, when I smell blood, it's not that I'm enjoying the person in front of me squirming, but I will make them squirm in pursuit of what I need to know to be able to accurately characterize what happened in a way that helps me decide, communicate with other people, right, what happened here, but to decide whether or not I think this is good or not. And look, this goes right back to our question, which doesn't really translate into Europe. I'm sorry for this, folks, but there's a classic American interviewing question. If you're an American, you know this and you went to college, you're going to get asked what your GPA is. Well, as you've heard me say before, the only correct answer to a yes or no question starts with a yes or a no. If you ask a yes or no question and you get well, it's going to be a bad answer. By the same token, if you get asked your GPA, the right answer is a number, perhaps with a decimal in it. That's all. It's a number. Any answer that starts without the number is a red flag, blood in the water for sharks who are recruiters. And it's not that they think you have a bad one. They think you have a bad one. And you think when you are at risk, you can spin words to defend yourself, which is not how professionals approach their professional life. The longer it takes a recruiter to hear what actually happened, the more we're sure as recruiters, as managers, as interviewers, that the questioner, that they're looking for a dodge, right? They're looking, it's obvious that this person is trying to dodge the answer. Look, folks, never confuse interviewing with political spin. And I'm sorry, but I've done work in the political world, and unfortunately, the mass of TV, and I'm reasonably sure this is also true in Europe, although it's just on steroids here in the US, the amount of information we get now through news media, where it is literally people talking and you get frustrated, they never answer the question. We're fed a steady diet of that. Even if you know it's wrong, if you're fed a steady diet of it, you're going to begin in some part of your brain to think there are times when that's okay. Aren't these people important? Aren't they elected officials? Aren't they senior administration officials? Doesn't matter your party. It happens on both sides. But look, don't confuse interviewing with political spin. The truth always wins, and spin with a good answer, in other words, some cleverly put together answer that is actually good, is worse than a wrong answer, which is plainly delivered. If I ask you your GPA and it's actually somewhat high, but you're worried about it, you're defensive, right? And you spin it, I'm going to say, oh, in other words, he wants to tell me, if you spend 2 minutes giving me all the reasons why it wasn't that good, and then you give me a number that I'm fine with, as opposed to giving me a number that's terrible. But in any case, you start with spin. I know immediately you're defensive. And when you're defensive, you're prepared to put what I want on the back burner to tell me what you want, which never works in an interview. Look, this is interviews are about selling your positives, But look, you do have negatives. When you attempt to cover up a negative, you tell us you have another weakness, which is worse than whatever you're trying to cover up, right? Because now you're saying, I like to cover things up. I believe I can verbally confuse you or deflect you. And recruiters won't stand for it. And managers and executives won't stand for it. Even, look, folks, even if you've been fired for cause, there is no reason not to say so. We're telling you now, if you're fired for cause, tell them you were fired. Again, you're not that smart. We're not that dumb. If you try to put a spin on it and we get a whiff of spin, and believe me, as recruiters, we're good at feeling that whiff, we will go after you until the end of time to find out what the truth is so that we can say we get to make up our own minds. You don't get to spin us. We're going to find out the truth, even if it takes the entire interview, because we're not going to allow our characterization of what happened to you to be your characterization, because we have different modes and values based on our job as a recruiter versus yours as an interviewee. I'm sorry, I got on a little rant there.
No, that's okay. We can spend a lot of time.
This is so important though, Mike. I mean, you've seen it, right? And you know what? It's kind of funny, if I can. Let me pick on technical people a little bit here. And Mike and I come
for
by
change.
This. No, but I want to do this in part because we have a lot of people who are technical who listen, and there is a, I don't know, George Will said it, that somehow in America, verbal facility has come to be associated with what Puritans consider to be church ornamentation. You know, it's the devil's work or something. This is too important to miss. What happens is technical people come into an interview. They're not good at verbal deftness. And they stumble through an answer while trying to be verbally deft, when in fact, the right answer is right in front of them. Just be honest. Just be direct. Talk about your career weakness the way you would talk about an error in code or a QA issue or anything else. You're direct. You're honest about it. It's the professional way to be. And you go from your strength, which is talking candidly about truth or about accuracy or about black and white. And then you turn away from that and you go to spin, which you're not any good at and which we don't want. It's like a double or triple negative. It just doesn't make sense.
I think you're right. Right, folks. The truth is right in front of them. And
yes.
Sometimes it's easier to tell the truth, right? You can be, you can be candid and spontaneous in your answers. So are you suggesting then that that's what we do? We tell the truth and we really don't have to prepare a lot because we can just be candid and spontaneous.
Yeah, it's funny. This is a different way of saying, tell your boss the truth or tell your recruiter the truth and the truth will set you free. The first time you do it, I guess we've never done a cast on what to do, how to communicate when you've been fired. But whenever, you know, friends of mine who know, because I talk about it openly, when they find out and they get fired, they call me and say, hey, look, what do I do? You seem to have handled it well. So the first thing you do is call your wife and half the time, or call your spouse, half the time they haven't done so. Like, no. They get to hear immediately. Get off the phone, call her, call him, and then call me back. You directly address it. So tell your recruiter the truth, and the truth will set you free in the sense that you don't feel scared about he doesn't know and I don't want him to know. But you're right, candor is good, but you've got to practice, okay? Because there's enough emotional baggage over career negatives. I got fired. I got laid off. I couldn't find a job for a year. I had to take a huge step back because I had to feed my family. I'm going to tell you something, folks. When I interview somebody and they say to me, Mark, I'm sorry, I took a year. I had to take a huge step back because I had bills to pay. I want to reach across and shake their hand and say, well done. You know, don't try to be clever and convince me of that. I look at the interview, I look at the resume, I say, okay, I took a step back. And I see how long you were unemployed. I say, you know, that's what I would do. That's what we recommend. Don't be shy about it. Don't ever apologize for putting your family first. Recruiters love that. They want that kind of candor. But you're emotionally tied to the failure that everyone's so afraid of failure, right? They're so emotionally tied to the failure that if you don't practice, the first few times you deliver it, it's going to be rough, and you want to deliver it as if it's not a big deal. Oh, he's my friend. Oh, yeah, he's my good friend. Oh, yeah, he's my closest friend ever, right? So now look, before we get into the details of the handling this, let's talk, though. Like we've alluded to them, right? Let's talk about the type of circumstances which might be causing folks concern. And by the way, we should have said this earlier, Mike, and I dropped the ball here. If you're listening to if you're still listening to this cast, but you're thinking about going away because this hasn't happened to you, Please continue listening. I don't think I've ever said this in a cast before, maybe once before. Don't drop out now because this hasn't happened to you. Because I promise you, the further you get up in your career, the greater the risks are, the easier it is to get fired, the more subtle the difficulties are, and you can be absolutely nearly letter perfect, and the word nearly is enough to get you canned. And the sign of a great executive is one who is self-confident enough internally in terms of their spiritual and their familial and their emotional state of being that when they get fired, they go, oh, that happened externally to me and I'm fine. And it's going to happen to you at some point. You're going to have a ding on your career. And now's the time to learn this so that when it happens, you'll immediately go, oh, and I know how to address this when I decide I'm going to go interview again. Right? So look, what could have happened? Look, you could have been laid off in a mass layoff. You might have been the only person in your team that was laid off, or the only person in your division that was laid off, which might actually be an indication it's not a layoff, but that's okay. You might have been fired. You know, I'm sorry to say it, you might be in good company if you got fired. Maybe you left your employer by mutual agreement. That happens a lot at executive and junior executive levels. Maybe you didn't complete probation where you were, you know, first 3 months on the job and they said, we're not firing you. We just officially didn't hire you because you never completed probation. Maybe you had a falling out with your boss. Maybe your boss was right, or maybe your boss was wrong. It doesn't matter. Maybe you made a really bad career choice and you went to a small company thinking it was going to be the great opportunity and the founder was a megalomaniac. Or maybe you went from a small company to a big company thinking everything would be fine and you politically stepped on yourself too much. Maybe you had a long-term illness and you couldn't work for a while. We understand that. Maybe you took time off to care for a sick relative. God bless you. Don't be defensive about that. Don't think they're going to figure out a way not to like that. Maybe you decided to be a mom or a dad. Who's going to argue with that? Maybe you were addicted to something. Maybe you had marital problems. Maybe you had legal problems. Maybe you had financial difficulties. Maybe you were a whistleblower. Maybe just one day you walked out because you were frustrated. Okay? Look, folks, none of the circumstances we just mentioned will ever prevent you alone from being employed in the future. Oh, somebody might ding you for it. But look, I've interviewed people who ding you for the way your hair is cut. So let's not assume that one person not liking the one situation you were in is therefore a big career negative. What makes it a career negative is the amount of time you spending saying, oh my gosh, I'm in trouble. Oh my gosh, I'm in trouble. All the while not making a decision and not moving forward, right? Look, some of the circumstances we just mentioned have happened to us. And frankly, as Wendy says, we all have the best jobs in the world. That's how Wendy introduces herself at conferences. I'm the girl with the best job in the world. Look, if you fell out with your boss, if you had legal difficulties, or you just had enough, maybe you need other help in terms of counseling or medical help. You know, we can't help you there. But provided you're now ready to do what it takes to be professional, you can. It's as simple as that. And there is no weakness that is the kiss of death, simply put. Now, look. It's going to be harder for you. We admit that, right? It's going to be harder. Maybe you have to take a lower level position, right? Maybe you have to work your way back up. Okay, well, I mean, look, if you're wondering about positions, when I got fired, I was doing very well, and I started my own company. You know what if you don't get VC money, you know what your salary is when you start your own company? Zero. So, I was employed. I just wasn't getting paid until I landed my first corporate client. Thank you, John Hoffman. Look, you just think of it as a career recuperation period. You'll need to be better than everybody else in an interview. We don't deny that. If you and somebody else are competing for a job and you have a significant career weakness in your background, you're going to have to be better than them. And frankly, we believe you can be. And I got to tell you something else. If you have a career weakness and you use our interviewing series, and this is not a tout for that, but if you use our interviewing series, I believe that all things being equal, unless the interviewing weakness is something enormously bad, as in you did physical violence to many people in your office and it was a matter of public record, I believe someone with a career weakness and the interviewing series will outperform somebody without a weakness and without the series. Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with that. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Because nobody else takes the time to be smart about preparation, and you are where you are regarding your career. The only thing left to leverage is the interviewing success you have in terms of your behaviors. And that's where the interviewing series helps.
Well, yeah, the interviewing series allows you to focus on the positives, right? The negative
is exactly. That's what it's all about.
It's just a small thing, right?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so, all right, we've got to decide how to answer this, right? And the first thing is we start with the truth. And look, maybe you get lucky and you don't have to answer it. And if you spend a lot of time worrying about it, boy, it'd be a bummer to not, you know, worrying about it without coming up with an answer, it'd be a bummer not to have. Not to answer it because, and you would say, well, it's great. I didn't have to answer it. Well, no, unfortunately, the rest of the interview didn't go that well because you spent so much time worrying about that one answer and trying to spin it. You didn't sell yourself very well. And they're going to tell you no for a different reason than you have a career weakness. On the other hand, 75% of interviewers who where there is some indication in advance that you have a career weakness, 75% of the interviewers will ask. Okay. Now, you know, Mike asked about, you know, can you just wing it? Can you give it off the cuff? No. The worst answers we've ever heard, Wendy and I have talked about this at length, are those that are given off the cuff. The candidate gives an answer, which is obviously not thought out, and then has a hole a mile wide in it, of course, because, of course, you're coming at it from your perspective. You're trying to figure out what you need to defend, and the recruiter's perspective is completely different. And, of course, the interviewer then feels compelled to ask more, and suddenly what should be a 1 or 2 minute max diversion is an entire conversation on a topic which is not positively affecting your employability in the interviewer's mind. That's the danger. You're not ready, and it turns into a 5 to 10 minute discussion. Not only is it a 5 minute, 10 minute discussion about a negative, and potentially if you do it poorly, it's another negative about your inability to spin things or your inability to recognize that spin is inappropriate, strike two. It's also 5 to 10 minutes, you not selling a positive. And in a 45 minute interview, that's a significant amount of time. So what we need to do is decide what the answer is, make sure it doesn't have any holes in it, and practice. Just like, tell me about yourself, just like leadership style, just like significant accomplishment answers, until you can deliver it without thinking.
If we do that, though, isn't it going to sound kind of rehearsed and stilted and unnatural?
I have to tell you, no. It's a great question. No, it's a totally fair question. It doesn't happen. It does not happen. You know, when I speak at Harvard, when I speak at Kellogg, when I speak at Duke, when I speak at Cal, Wharton, you know, Chicago, wherever, I always get this question. And I say, no, practice. You'll discover that you won't be able to repeat the words exactly because there isn't an exact script. And your brain will be so scrambled from the stress of the interview that you're going to miss 10% of your answer, but the fundamental structure stays in your mind and you'll put different words around it every single time. Look, think about a basic example. Think of it this way. Somebody asks you, where did you grow up? You can all answer that question without thinking, right? Everybody can do that. But what that does, because you can answer without thinking, because you know it so well, and in the case of a career weakness, it's because you've practiced, you can give an answer which is nuanced depending upon the questioner because you're so confident about what it is you're basically going to say. Look, if somebody asks Wendy where she's from, for locals, she says Stanwell. For people in London, she says near Heathrow, right? For those who might know where Heathrow is, right? And just outside London, for anybody who probably isn't European. Practice doesn't make you sound rehearsed, folks. It allows you to answer without hesitation, without emotion, and to make the subtle adjustments according to circumstances based on what's happened in the previous 15 to 20 minutes of the interview. Practice makes your answers better. People often comment, hey, Mark, give me your answer for tell me about yourself. And I give it, and it all just comes right back to my mind. And every time I say it, I said, I'm sorry, that was a little rusty, and people's mouths just hang open. Well, I've done it 50,000 times, right? I don't have it in my head right now. If I started delivering it, I could deliver it. But it's certainly not the Pledge of Allegiance. It's not O Canada. It's not God Save the Queen. It's not I know it by heart. I know the words. It's not the words. It's the ideas. And practicing the words over and over again reminds you of the structure of the ideas. So decide on the answer, which is to say, tell the truth, be blunt in telling the truth, and then practice that over and over and over and over again.
Okay, well, I'm glad you finished that up by saying decide on an answer, i.e. the truth, because I was worried a little bit that the idea that decide on an answer, you know,
yeah,
could be construed as saying, well, it doesn't matter really what the circumstances were. I was fired for cause, for example, and I've decided that I'm going to portray it as being a reduction of force.
There you go. Exactly. Yeah, it's like, well, a meteor. No, you don't get to decide a meteor is involved in your career. Although, I think about some people that we know that are involved in astronomy, maybe a meteor is involved in people's careers. Yeah, look, just to be clear, when we say decide, we don't mean make one up. Look, it is true. Folks, we're not kidding you, okay? We're not we don't have rose-colored glasses on that say, you know, that well, you answer this way and you're fine. No, being honest might lose you an interview. It might lose you a job in the future. But separate from the fact that being ethical is an important tenet of career tools, and we're not going to tell you to be honest, the other part is spin and manipulation and bending the truth is essentially a double whammy. It's you have a weakness and now you're trying to spin it. If someone recommends you do this, and it's always a family member that says, oh my gosh, you can't say that, you can't do that. When someone says that to you, it's wrong. It's stupid.
Yeah, we got to talk about that because the wrongness, I think folks get, right? Which it's wrong. It's morally and ethically wrong. People get that. Now, the question, though, is the stupidness part of it, which is, yeah, it may be wrong, but man, if that's what's going to get me the job, then hey, if it works, yeah, it ain't stupid, right?
The ends justify the means, right? Yeah. In this case, it's not just the ethics, it's the stupidity. And to be clear, we're strong enough about ethics that we'd rather you didn't get a job, a promotion, or a raise because you lied to get it, right? You say you got laid off when in fact you got fired. Look, lies are found out when they are everything. Every single answer you give in that interview is questioned. And you have every question, every answer you give questioned, you're done. Maybe you only bent the truth on the last roll, but recruiters are aware of the subtleties. And when they know, when they hear your answer replayed in their head and they listen to words very carefully, and then they hear what actually happened later or hear it from somebody else and it's different, and they know I've been doing this for a long time and I know spin when I see it, even though it's a pretty good answer, they might pat you on the back and say, pretty clever spin there. The fact is, every other thing you've said or done is held in suspicion. You won't be able to be trusted, and who are we going to hire that we don't trust, right? And look, communities are still small enough that not only does people at that company know, but the word gets out. It's just not worth it. And look, again, this is the whole stupid thing. This is dumb, but it's not necessary, okay? Negative circumstances have happened to us, and we're all doing fine. Mark's been fired. Wendy's been fired. Mike made some bad choices, less than Mark and Wendy, but, you know, that's why he's in charge. All the best CEOs in the world have been fired, right? We learn from these situations. We all followed our advice, and we got hired again. We don't need to lie. You don't either. It's really simple, and it's stupid because, again, recruiters feel it, sense it, know it, and they lick their chops and say, no, I'm going to get to the truth. And if the truth isn't exactly what he says, two strikes, because now he has a weakness, which, yeah, okay, if you have a weakness, it's a strike, but don't give yourself a second one by trying to spin it because you can't. The recruiter will know.
All right, folks, that's it for this week. We'll finish this one up next week. In the meantime, have a great one. So long.